Okay, so let's get right into the Q&A session of today's webinar. Joining me today to help answer our questions, I have a number of subject matter experts. First, I have Joe Mora from the UAS Integration Office. I have Rob Hawks from our General Counsel's Office. We have Bill Davis from our Air Traffic Organization. We have Scott Gore from our Government Affairs Office. And we've got a number of questions and just over half an hour to go through as many of them as we can. So let's get right into it. First question is for you, Joe. Will there be more guidance published on how private sector participants will be evaluated to determine their organization's level of experience?
So thank you, Eric. I think I need to frame this in the concept of this is a selection for a program with the time limits that were described in the video. And for those of you that didn't see it, it's all described in the screening information request. So will there be more information that will be published to aid or let private sector know what may help them or what we're looking for? So the short answer is no. There's all the resources on the website right now, and that's not to shortchange anybody's information going into this program. What it is to do is to promote innovation, to promote your ideas to be presented to the government on how you're going to partner with state, local, tribal, territories, or holdings. And as those lead applicants, the state, local, or tribal governments, how you as a private sector could partner with them. So once again, you can reach out right now. You can submit as an interested party. You can reach out, whether that's going to be through us or directly to them. I hope that helps.
Very good. Thank you, Joe. Got a question about the SIR and avoid using acronyms. So the screening information request. So Gavin, can you confirm for folks on the line where the screening information request will be posted?
Yes, thanks, Eric. The screening information request can be found on the FAA's Contract Opportunities website. It's otherwise known as FACO, and that is FAACO.FAA.gov. You can find both the screening information request that we call the SIR and the Memorandum of Agreement, which is a sample draft at this time that we call the MOA. Thank you.
Good. And do we know, we have questions about when the Federal Register notice will be published. Do we have a specific date for that?
We don't have a date yet, but it will be next week. Probably towards the middle of the week.
So as part of this is a question about from somebody who works for a local government. They say, as part of a mid-sized local municipal government, will this be a competitive process for us?
So I'll start with that. This is Joe Moore again. Will this be a competitive process? So the presidential memo directs the Secretary of Transportation to evaluate and look at a minimum of at least five programs here. So based on you being mid-level or you being a small organization or being a large organization, we're looking for diversity across the board. We're looking for things that will push the UAS industry forward and remain leaders in innovation. So just the fact that you're mid-level or whatever you want to call yourself does not mean that that does not prevent you from providing information and partnering with those that could multiply the message and could actually progress things like beyond visual line of sight, commerce, operations over people, a lot of the other issues that should be engaged at not only a federal level, but state, local, tribal. And I think in one of our earlier webinars, Bill Davis had given us some information too, that it doesn't really matter whether you're small, large,
Bill, did you want to talk about that a little bit?
So I can. Just to go back to the competition question, the fact that we anticipate to receive more than five applications and can only initially pick five, it connotes that there is some kind of competition here. I mean, there is a screening process, and we're interested in picking the five applications that promote innovation, promote integration into the national airspace system, help resolve the issues with communities interfacing with the UAS, all the things that are outlined in the presidential memo and in the Federal Register notice and the CERT. But we don't particularly don't want small applicants to feel at risk or large applicants to feel at risk or either one to feel advantaged. A small applicant may have an idea that is scalable across hundreds or potentially thousands of communities. So that could be of enormous value. Remember that the idea is to increase the value of the national airspace system by adding more users to it, and that can add users, create jobs, add to the gross national product, all the things that the president wants us to do. So big or large, we're after innovation, so surprise us. Or excuse me, big or small, we're after innovation, so feel free to surprise us.
All right, here's the next question about law enforcement. Can a law enforcement agency be a lead applicant?
The simple answer is yes. Law enforcement agency would be a local or state government entity.
So what about a university?
Provided that it's a state university, yes, that should also qualify.
Here's a question about the specific number of proposals that will be selected. I know we covered it earlier, but the question reads, are there a specific number that will be selected, or will there be more than five?
So I'll start with that and then maybe hand off to Gavin here. If the presidential memo calls out at least five. So we will be working hard to select diversity across all operations and across all things that are submitted in coordination with the Department of Transportation. And it also calls out that we'll coordinate with Department of Defense, Department of Homeland Security, and the Attorney General's office too. So those five will be initially evaluated based on the process that was described earlier in the webinar. Now, that doesn't preclude us, because this is a three-year program, from opening up additional rounds later on. So, Gavin, anything to add to that?
Yeah, that's perfect, Joe. I just might add that this process is a selection. It is an evaluation of applications. It is our intent to make awards, have you, or selections to at least five within 180 days. And where we will be conducting things on a rolling basis, it doesn't mean that it will only be five, but that is the initial intent.
Okay, great, thank you. Next question reads, can you partner with two government entities? Is it possible to team up with state and local simultaneously?
The answer to that is yes. I don't see anything that would preclude you, as long as you, as the lead applicant, are a public entity, state or local tribal government.
I've got a number of questions here, probably six or seven of them, that ask the same question. How much funding will be available for this particular program from the FAA?
Short answer is no funding will be available for this program. No funding will be available for the preparation of your application or your proposals or any responses to the FAA. And at this juncture, there is no plans to fund any performance of this project.
Thank you, Gavin. I want to take a minute and I want to call attention to everybody on the screen, on your screen, the webinar screen. If you have questions today, we're going to get through as many of them as we possibly can. And we've got about 30 minutes left. If we don't answer your question, or you still have additional questions, or you have a more detailed question, please feel free to submit them by email to the address that's on the screen. That's 9-AWA-UASIPP@FAA.gov. Or you may call our helpline. It's available Monday through Friday from 8 to 4. And that's 844-FLY-MY-UA. And that's our reference right on the screen for you. They're also on our website, which I mentioned earlier, www.faa.gov/UAS. Let's move on. We've got plenty more questions here, and we've got a little bit of time to get through as many of them as we possibly can. Here's a question from a city in Texas. We currently use UAS across many different divisions for fire, rescue, surveying, and inspection. What could this program do for us?
So this is Joe Moore again. I guess I will turn that around to say what can you propose or partner that we together collaboratively can do for your needs, your industry, and furthering your missions. So once again, whether you're a lead applicant or an interested party, that segment, whether it be fire, rescue, search and rescue, any of those avenues will obviously be considered and could be part of this program. So furthering a segment could be anything.
I just add to that, I'd kind of cast it just slightly differently. So it sounds like you're fairly active. What would you like to do in addition to what you're doing now, and how would you propose to do it? That's it in a nutshell.
The next question is about the role of the UAS test sites and the Center for Excellence. The question reads, what does this program do that the test sites and the Center for Excellence do not already do?
So this is Joe Moore. I'll start off with that answer here again. So I want to be clear that this program provides an opportunity for partnerships here. It provides an opportunity for state, local, tribal territories and holdings to get actively involved also with interested parties coming from industry and with the federal government. So what does it do in the selection process is that it allows those communities to get engaged from the ground floor up and think about the things that are going to impact and the things that they can bring to the table. Operationally, after the selections have been made for the projects, then nothing has changed. The presidential memo does not give any additional authority to the FAA or to our congressional limits, our legislative limits, our statutory or regulatory ways of approving operations. So all the things the test sites are doing right now, all the things that you as UAS operators are doing out there right now, we are going to be working within those bounds. And a lot of those bounds will probably involve things like waivers, exemptions, deviations, considering things like economic authority, lots of different projects. So once again, this is an extension. This is an opportunity to really engage all the players at once that need to be involved for integration to really work.
Good. Thank you, Joe. Next question is about utility companies. Could a utility company such as Hawaii Electric or San Diego Gas and Electric be a lead applicant? And do they have to be the lead?
They probably, based on how those individual entities are organized, are probably not government entities. They're probably public utilities that are organized separately. However, that would depend upon the organization of the entity.
So they could be a participant?
Most likely they'd be an interested party that would partner with a jurisdiction. However, it is possible that they would qualify as a jurisdiction themselves.
Okay, so maybe on a case-by-case basis?
Case-by-case basis.
Okay. Understood.
But that does not preclude you from going out and becoming a team member of others as far as lead applicants. So you have the choice here. Just because you might not be able to be a lead applicant regardless of who you are, it does not preclude you from reaching out right now to state, local, tribal governments, because there are strict timelines on this too. So
if you happen to be a utility that did not qualify as a lead applicant, you could reach out to a state right now and the state that within that you where you operate and seek a partnership?
Absolutely. Yes. And that can be done through our, you can submit on our website. And I do need to put a plug out there because we are receiving right now. When you do send the email to that address, let's go back to the screening information request. That is the controlling document. And if you copy and paste right out of that document the way that your email is going to look, it does make it a little bit easier on the receiving end here because the software we're using to parse that out will recognize that. We are evaluating everything that's coming in through that email, but once again, whether you're a lead applicant or an interested party, if you're going to choose to submit that way, go to the screening information request and please copy and paste right out of that.
Great. Thanks, Joe. So we've got a number of questions from folks that are probably Part 107 pilots today, and they're asking, as a UAS operator, how can we help assist with the program? How can we get involved if we're currently operating as a Part 107 flyer?
So first off, I'm really happy, or we're happy, that that you are certificated 107 operators out there. Now, as Bill Davis had said before, a lot of this program is about pushing the boundaries of things that you're authorized to do today and what is the future going to look like. So if you have something to bring to the table, if you have something to bring to a team, a partnership in this that you believe can move the industry forward, both economically and safety-wise, then we encourage you to partner with others out there to work for it. Your experience could also help any of these, because part of the evaluation process is past performance too. So once again, if you're deep into the industry and you've got lots of experience, our test sites were mentioned before, they have excellent experience too. All that experience can be discussed in your application process.
All right, thanks, Joe. And let me pull on this thread just a little bit further. So the question reads, as a Part 107 commercial pilot, does this program preclude me from applying for COAs and waivers?
So let's separate again the application process to become part of a pilot program versus the actual operations. So you can be any entity to get involved in the program. You don't necessarily have to be a 107 certificate holder. You don't have to be a manned pilot certificate holder at that stage. Once we get into a memorandum of agreement and operations are proposed, then we're going to need to be regulatorily compliant. So you are going to need to be operating under the fundamentals that we operate right now in the NAS, which is using a certificated pilot, using an aircraft that has airworthiness or some recognition of that, as we have through Part 107. And you're going to have to be operating in accordance with operating or authorization rules, which come in the form of many of our rules that are out there.
So the next question, thank you, Joe. The next question is, as a UAS operator, how can we help assist with this program? Should we go to our local government and propose to them our ideas and explain the program? What's our next step?
So the short answer is yes. The timelines in this are fairly tight. So we recommend that you put your best foot forward early on and form these partnerships clearly. And also, they need to be formed in a manner that they can productively move the hard issues forward here. So as Bill Davis had said before, this program is designed to promote innovation. It's also designed to have functional results that can be broadened across the whole stream. So ideas are fantastic. They also need to be backed up with some plans and considerations of past performance and team members that you're going to be partnering with. So you need to be considering all those things. Bill?
I just add one thing that I remember that the first the first gate, the 20-day gate, on, is really the thing that you need to be concerned about. For the most emergent response, and that's simply a notice of intent to participate. So you would, in theory, have time to go to your local jurisdiction and potentially generate some interest. And if they're willing to submit a notice of intent, then that gives you additional time then to, you know, develop a more fulsome application and complete the process. And it may be that they decide not to proceed, but you won't have lost a whole lot, because the effort that you would have expended is basically that initial contact, proposing where the jurisdiction and whatever the entity you represent is, how you could move the industry and the country forward, and good luck.
Okay, so I've got a couple of questions. Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Joe. About what it means to be an interested party. So what are the requirements to join the program as an interested party, and are there any limitations on being an interested party?
Hello, this is Gavin from Acquisitions. I really don't think there are any limitations on being an interested party. Just to be a party that would like to participate and add something to the UAS integration pilot program. You can be a public, you can be a private entity. Basically, what you're doing with being an interested party is putting your name out there for other parties to possibly contact you, or for you to contact them, or for potential state and local governments that are lead applicants to see your name on a list and perhaps make contact with you for participation.
Thanks, Gavin. We've also been joined by Jeannie Schiffer from our Office of Communications, and timing is perfect because I've got a question that's well-suited for you, Jeannie, and also for Scott from our Government Affairs Office. The question is, if we are selected, would we be able to publicly discuss our involvement with the media or in public meetings?
If you're selected, yes, that would be a publicly known fact. So then certainly you could discuss it externally as you see fit. Absolutely.
Will a lead applicant have access to an interested parties list that may benefit their program or proposal?
The answer is yes. The interested parties list will be made publicly available on the FAA's Contract Opportunities website. Again, that's faaco.faa.gov. As the interested party requests come in, they will be gathered. They'll be put into a list. The list will then be periodically placed and published on the FACO site.
So Gavin noted, everybody will have access to the list that's published online on that website that the FAA manages. In addition to that list, we would encourage, as we've discussed, if you're a private sector entity, you can go talk with your local stakeholders, your local government elected officials and entities about generating interest in this program, and ask them to submit a notice of intent within the deadline, which is short. So we would encourage those conversations in the coming days and weeks. If you're interested in participating in the program, in addition to the list that FAA will be posting online.
All right. So thanks, Scott. Thanks, Kevin. So we've got the list of interested parties that goes on the FACO website. But, Jeannie, we've also got another option as well, right?
We do. We've set up an exchange, a Facebook group, for both interested parties and lead applicants, so that you could see those lists there together, and also, engage in conversation and back and forth and collaborate there on that platform.
So how will people know to join that Facebook group?
So in the email reply that they get when they submit their original email to participate in the program, they'll get an automatic response, and that information and instructions about joining that group will be within that return email.
Good. Thank you. All right, I've got a long question here, good scenario, and I'm going to read the whole thing, and Joe, probably be one for you. So let me start.
I think I speak for a lot of Part 107 commercial drone operators when I say our biggest challenge or hurdle is operating in controlled airspace, and the current 3-month or longer application process behind it. Is one of the 5 potential proposals or more being accepted behind this program? Are they focused strictly on revised or more streamlined airspace waiver and application process that would affect all of the Part 107 commercial drone operations?
Well, thanks, Eric, and good question. So some of these initiatives are already underway with air traffic here, and I'll let Bill take that. But obviously anything that will enhance safety and deconfliction and access to airspace is a good proposal. I can't qualify where it will lay with the other proposals, but once again, we have a rule that's out there, and obviously you're operating in accordance with it. Operating in certain controlled airspace could certainly be something that you could propose. However, we are going to be exploring things, and it has not been mentioned yet, that a lot of this program is focused on 200 feet and below, with the option of making requests up to 400 feet. So I encourage everybody to think about, while we're working on automation and technology here in the FAA, what would be the things that could be focused on from an industry partnership? And maybe the airspace discussions you're talking about really relate back to the local communities, the state, local, tribal, and territories too. How does that affect them when you're operating in, we consider airspace as pilots, you know, the classes of airspace and aircraft going through them, but there's also the considerations of the airspace around the neighborhoods. So the proposals can be as robust as you want them to be. Bill, any additional on airspace?
No, I would agree. There's certainly social and cultural concerns. That's why we need an entity to basically be the sponsor, because they have to be willing and have interest in taking on this task and learning what they're able to learn. Remember that there's other users of the airspace in the manned airplane, in the manned airplane or aircraft system. And for example, we fly about 1 billion passengers a year through the National Airspace System on commercial airplanes. And so ultimately, the UAS and this manned fleet have to interact and integrate more successfully. So we're interested in doing that, because 1 billion people that are going to fly every year is likely to continue to grow, not go the opposite directions. Our projections are that it will continue to grow. And our projections also are that UAS use will continue to grow. So recognizing those two phenomena, then we're trying to advance our knowledge on how to cause that integration to happen more artfully and more successfully. And key to that is, what is it that the people in the nation want to do with UAS going forward? And so that's what we're trying to find out.
Great. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Bill. So we've got about 10 minutes left in the webinar. We started a couple minutes late while people were logging in, so we won't shortchange you. We'll go just past 4 o'clock, and we'll get as many questions in as we possibly can. And I have a bunch here, so let's get to it. Gavin, can multiple government organizations submit with the same private organization?
Yes. There's nothing that would preclude a private stakeholder or a industry from being a partner with multiple public entities.
And does, if we submit multiple applications for different drone applications or projects, does that decrease our chance of receiving approvals?
No.
If 20 days seems like a short, I'm going right to the questions here, Gavin, keep me on the hot seat, okay? 20 days seems like a short time frame to educate local government on potential UAS use. After the 20 days, the submission process will be closed, is that right? Is this a one-time only process, or will this be open again later in the future for another round of consideration?
I'll start kind of from the back. It It may be opened in the future for future consideration. It is part of the program that we would address things on a rolling basis, initially getting to five selected participants. Help me out, Eric, with the front part of that question again.
They were asking whether or not there would be addition, whether it would be opened up again in the future. If they missed that.
Well, I think the part that
the 20 days.
The 20 days. I mean, actually, I'll jump in from an operational side maybe to help a little bit here too. Remember, the president instructed too that all the ideas are welcome, but keep in mind that the goal is to be operational within 270 days. Now, the program runs for 3 years, but in order to be operational and have signed memorandums of agreements and selections and everything and the appropriate time to give the authorizations that will be necessary to get operational there, that's where some of these timelines drive from. So I didn't mean to cut you off there, Gavin.
Not at all. I'd just like to add, if there, you know, is some concern about the 20 days, to not to let that steer you away, you actually have 20 days to simply submit an email. And when I say simply, it's just about that. If you go to the FACO site, you read the section of the SIR that gives you the directions for requesting access to the portal, for providing an application. It's just a matter of submitting an email, cutting and paste about a quarter of a page of very simple identification information to us, and you'll be vetted and you will get granted access to that portal. That can be done in 20 days. And then from there, you have the additional 37 days. That'll bring you to 57 to actually complete a proposal.
Great. Thank you, Gavin. Let's move on, change topics here. What scale of UAS or drones is the focus of this program? We are very familiar with small quadcopters that we see everywhere. What about the 55-pound size commercial systems, or these 10,000-pound size military systems, or even the 200,000-pound eventual cargo haulers?
So the short answer to that is anything that can be flown in the altitudes that are being described in this program could be considered. And Part 107 is one way, one basic rule that the framework could operate under. However, our other operational rule, our main rule, Part 91, and others are all up for consideration here. So it's not limited to less than 55 pounds.
Right. Yeah, and I would just also add the core goals of this program are, again, to enable advanced UAS operations on a routine basis, and how we can achieve that and move integration forward, as well as how the various levels of government at federal, state, local, and tribal are all going to coordinate regarding those operations that are going to be occurring at low altitude. So we want to see those kind of innovative proposals. We want to be surprised, as Bill was saying earlier. If you have a really innovative idea, we encourage you to form your team with a lead applicant, a political subdivision, or a governmental entity, and start the process to submit a proposal. And diversity of those proposals and the innovation is really what DOT and FAA are looking for.
And Scott, I'll add, because Bill used the word before, artful. That is really the hope of this program, too, by engaging with those local governments at the same time with us, the FAA, with the Department of Transportation, with industry. You can have all the relevant parties and the whole team at the table together working these hard issues.
Great. Thank you, gentlemen. Just a couple questions here about altitude. They just want clarification about whether or not the program is focused on 200 feet above ground level or lower or higher.
So based on the presidential memo, and anybody can jump in if they'd like here, it says the focus is on 200 feet with considerations up to 400 feet. Now, I don't believe that it calls out that it is specifically above ground level, but that's typically what the FAA interprets those operations to be. But once again, I would go back to the source documents, and if you're pushing those boundaries, or if you're looking at whether you fit within those boundaries, I almost want to go back on my first comment that are there going to be additional resources? The answer wasn't totally no. There are a lot of resources on our website, and when you go to all these guiding documents, whether they be the Federal Register notice, presidential memo, the Screening Information Act request, or our webinar series. We're trying to put as much clarity and as much information out there for you to understand where the boundaries of this project are. So go back to the source documents, and we'll do our best to keep updating the website.
Also, if I could just add, we are trying to make it easy for the public to find all of those resource documents. So if you go to FAA.gov, you will find a link that has all of these resources that we mentioned, the screening information request, as well as the FR memo and the presidential memo, all in one place.
So, Jeannie, so I actually have a number of questions specifically about that. So you're saying on our website, FAA.gov/UAS, you can find a link to the Federal Register notice,
yeah,
a link to the screening information request, a link to the presidential memo. So everything you need is on our website. Even if you don't go to any of the other websites, you can get where you need to go from ours.
Absolutely. We don't want people to have to go to the Federal Register website and different websites. We're trying to make it as easy as possible for everyone to have those resources in one place.
Good, thanks. So just to reiterate for those of you on the phone, a lot of questions came in about that. Start at www.faa.gov/UAS. Okay, we've got several minutes left and we have plenty of questions, so let's talk about the value of the program. Here's the question. Can you reiterate the value of this program? It's already possible to partner with the government and non-government entities and to file for waivers. So I'm curious about some of the specifics of the program. Does it yield expedited waiver approvals, blanket waiver approvals, anything else?
So this is Joe Moore. I'll start with that again. What it yields is the benefit to explore waivers or exemptions or anything that will feed into eventual rulemaking that could benefit the public as a whole. So will there be expedited approvals? For the particular projects being proposed, this is a pilot program. So the expectation is that, yes, there should be some expedited approvals to learn from those. But it is not to the benefit of those selected there. It's to the benefit of the whole country to guide us, to help us become better with waivers, to help us understand what the public wants. And like I said, eventually this all leads to what are the directions our rulemaking can go in next, where can we be most effective, can it inform legislation, can it inform local governments of their things. There's lots of opportunity here for information to come out. And by being involved as a team, I think that's what the true benefit of this project is.
Great. Thank you, Joe. We've got a couple more questions here about partnering. Here's the question. Can a private business that directly supports the Federal Railroad Administration, their Transportation Technology Center in Pueblo, Colorado, submit as a lead applicant or just an interested party?
That sounds like you would just be able to submit as an interested party. You would have to be actually a public entity, a state, local, or tribal government to submit as a lead applicant, and I don't think that description that.
And I think we've had this question come before about federal governments. It is not designed for federal organizations, but that does not preclude a federal organization from becoming involved in any particular project, but just not in the roles that are described in the CERN.
Thank you, Joe.
So we've got one more question on partnership, and then we've got time for maybe one or two more questions, and then we'll conclude our session for today. Can law enforcement entities at different levels throughout a jurisdiction partner together as a lead applicant?
This is Rob. I think that probably one of those levels would be the lead applicant, and the other levels, you know, would be partners as part of that particular program or that project.
And again, just to add to Rob's comment, in the Federal Register notice, it does talk about that as well in the how to apply section regarding multi-jurisdictional groups, multi-state groups that are eligible to apply. But again, there would be one lead applicant as part of that group that is identified to interface with the FAA regarding the program.
But remember, this is a contractual agreement here, so there needs to be somebody that can actually execute and be part of that memorandum of agreement.
Here's a question about if somebody wants to change their role during the process. And it reads, if we initially sign up as an interested party, but then decide to take the lead applicant role, are we able to make that change?
I would say try to decide within the first 20 days about whether or not you are going to be a lead applicant. You also need to be a state, local, or tribal government to be a lead applicant. I would keep it at that.
Great. Thank you, Gavin. I want to thank everyone who participated in the webinar today for the first part of the viewing of the video and also for our live Q&A session. As I mentioned earlier, the video will be posted online on our website later today. The question and answers for all of the webinars, currently we have four planned, will be summarized, and we'll post a document sometime late next week with a summary from all four of the webinars. If you missed your question, if you did not get your question answered today, and there were quite a few that we didn't get to, I apologize for that, feel free to submit them to the email address that's listed on the screen, the 9-AWA-UASIPP@FAA.gov email address, and we'll get to those as quickly as we can. And we want to thank you for joining us today. The Department of Transportation, the FAA, very excited about this new program. And we are committed to advancing UAS integration in an innovative and collaborative manner. And we hope this information session was helpful. We look forward to evaluating creative proposals that will address our collective challenges and move the industry forward. Thanks again for participating.